Aye. All right. Now, last week we got into Haggai, and the first thing that comes up is the fact that the Lord told Haggai to go prophesy that a people who had been told by the king to discontinue their work and did should be told without the king's orders but by God's word to go back to work and build a house. And so they were ordered by the prophet to go back and to be civilly disobedient and go against the king's order and go on anyway for God's sake. Now, that brought up a long discussion last time of some things to consider in civil obedience and civil disobedience, and we went through a lot of details on that, gave you some stuff on both sides, some things to consider, and I wanted to continue here for just a little while along that line just because of the day that we live in. We're in the middle of a presidential election again, and a lot of issues get run past you. A lot of frustrated people in this country, and for a good reason. And I just wanted to say, in talking about this a little bit more, you know, you're going to always be tempted by somebody to get off on the wrong track. And I'd like to make sure that, at least in putting my two bits in tonight, and hopefully scripturally speaking, about not getting off on the wrong track. I told you last time I know of a guy, I don't know the guy. His name is Chuck Baldwin. He used to pastor a big Baptist church in Pensacola and became super active in the patriotic movement, the founding forefathers, all that kind of stuff, constitutionalism and such. Ran for vice presidency of the country under the Constitutional Party, I think a few elections ago. Moved to Montana to start and was going to move to Montana because he wanted to go to a state that was free and take up this constitutional banner, this patriotic banner. So he now pastors a church that's not even, as far as I can see, a scriptural church. And you'll be tempted to get off and do something squirrely like that. You don't have to go. You'll eventually run into some who say that us churches have no business being 501(c)s, and there's some argument about that. But there'll also be some guys that say you have no business taking a driver's license from the state. You have no business putting a tag on your car. In fact, when you get married, don't even go to the county seat and get a license, because it's none of the bless God business of the government to tell you what to do. And if once you start down that road, just so you know, there's no end. I mean, you'll just get weirder and weirder on more and more stuff. Now, there's a milder form of it, and please don't misunderstand. There are some principles even in it that you can agree with, because really, I mean, is it the government's business whether you shoot a cat and throw it in the woods on your property if it's your cat? I mean, really? And incidentally, if you burn oil on your property, is it really the government's business? I didn't say I did. I said if you do. And, you know, when it comes to a driver's license or whatever, where in the Constitution is it found mandated that you should have to go every whatever, however many years and get a driver's license again and re-up and all that stuff? And where is a Social Security number in the Constitution? Where's a Social Security number in the Bible? All those things. That's what I'm saying. If I own a gun, I should be able to carry a gun regardless of whether I have a license or not. Rah! And in principle, you can agree. But how far are you going to take it? And then here we are. We're in an election cycle, that's what they call them. And you have the resident communist who's not constitutional at all. You have some folks running for office, and one of the guys is a very gregarious, outgoing fellow who may or may not in the end wind up being constitutional at all. You have another guy that is a very constitutional candidate, at least he says he is. And, you know, we're encouraged at every turn by some. You're encouraged to basically give up a great deal of your time and your youth, your energy and your money, to go and recover the country. Recover it and replace it on its constitutional settings. And I want to say, if you want to go that route, that's fine, but nobody that's ever gone that route wholly have I ever seen come back and amount to anything spiritually. Because the fact of the matter is, you can only fight so many battles. You can only live for so many things in your life. And if you're living for Jesus Christ and doing something for Him, then if you start trying to divide time with being a constitutional scholar, advocate, and political activist, there is not enough time in the day, and you don't have enough years left in your life. So my concern with it all, I intend to vote. I intend to vote for a guy that'll support Israel, and if there are none to do that, I just won't vote, like last time. If, I can vote for a guy that is going to help return us to, and I believe Cruz is saved. I think Cruz is a true constitutional candidate. I think he is. He swears that he will disband the IRS on the first day. Yes! And there's a few other things he says he's going to do. Now, whether he does them or not, we've been told stuff like that before. And my point is that, yeah, I'm going to vote. I'm not one of these guys. Don't vote. No, I'm going to vote. But I ain't going to spend no more time with it. And the reason is because you can lose yourself in that stuff really bad. I thought it would be worth time, since you are tempted by some to get super active. If you go caucus with your political party, I don't have a problem with that. But it shouldn't affect how you serve Jesus Christ during the week. If you're going to give time for that thing and contribute to some cause, then fine, but you better be careful lest that thing run away with you. And I know what drives people to distraction and frustration. Let me show you something that I put together here that might help you. I've struggled with some of this, and every time I read the passage, my bell goes ding, ding, ding. Look in Romans 13. I know we were there last week. Let me just give you a couple of thoughts here. The guy in Montana, I told you moved out there, has beat the drum now for several years in a weekly blog, radio show, he's kind of an article writer, whatever you call those, journalist, and he's beat the drum for a while for basically patriotic revolution. He's ready to go back to 1776 and refight the battle over. After all, our founding fathers saw fit to break off from Great Britain and fight for our independence and our right to vote whether we tax ourselves or not. And so we should do that now. We should arm and have a revolution. It worked to break the U.S. away from Great Britain. That's true. But last I remember, there was another 13 states 100 years later, or close to it, that tried that. And it didn't work out so good. And what makes you think that if a revolution such as that starts again, that you will succeed? And if you don't succeed, but you've given your life to it, where are you? Wind up standing before the judgment seat of Christ, what'd you do? What was the cause that you died for again? And your nation, what is America? America fits in among the nations. Look, folks, you got Israel, and God's center is on Israel, and you're nowhere even close to Israel. The rest of us are just nations. Our nation has a foundation of some Christian principle that's true. Patriotism is fine. But we've just come out of a generation that more or less equated patriotism with Christianity. And that's not true. Because America has always been the world. It's become more and more the world as time goes by. We're less and less Christian as time goes by. And my point simply is that we're just another nation. What this nation will be judged on is its own righteousness and its own treatment of the Jews. Well, don't look now, but we just said that queers can get married. I didn't, but we collectively did. Right? Now in our country, queers can get married. What do you think God thinks of that? Probably about what he thought of Sodom and Gomorrah. What does that tell you about where America's headed? Now, I know we're not there yet. I'm just saying your country is the world. And if you think somehow you've equated the idea of God and Christ and country in some sort of collective because you read in the Bible where God chose a nation, that nation was blessed. And if that nation does certain things, God will bless that nation. They'll be the center of God's spotlight. That is not the case in America. You're not the center of God's spotlight. Your country is not. It never has been. Our relation to God as a country relates as much to our relation to Israel as a country as anything else. And my point simply is you can get really bad off track on that stuff. And so there's always somebody around trying to push you over the edge to get you imbalanced on the country, the Constitution, whether we should be headed towards revolution again, because after all, we need to reestablish this country on its godly foundations. And just tell me what you really think about us stopping this humongous machine we got going, sliding downhill. I mean, it's like crawling up on the back of an African elephant and trying to beat it to death with a quirt. You really think that a president or a governor or a party can revive America to its roots? I mean, do you really? I don't. Now, if things can get better, okay, but it's just going to be for a while. Now, with that said, you do what you feel like God would have you do, but I'm trying to keep you from wasting your youth and your time and your money. Again, you have some folks that tell you at every turn to get super involved in this electoral process and get the right man in. And for some, that's Donald Trump, and for some, it's Ted Cruz. And if you're for Bernie Sanders, you've got something wrong with you. Anyway, but that's just my statement. I told you to turn to Romans 13. Let me point out something to you here. Could I point out to you Romans 13, 1? Let every soul, you think that means what it says, let every soul. Talking to Romans, this is a Roman Empire, this is not Israel proper, but the Roman Empire. Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers. For there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Now, think about that for a second. How do you read that? I must admit to you that I have wrestled with that a little bit, because the powers that be are ordained of God. So Barack Obama, as President of the United States, is ordained of God. So we were ordained to live under a Marxist Muslim. We were ordained to. It was set in stone before the foundation of the world that that's what should happen here. You can look at it that way, but there's another way to look at it that might make it make more sense to you. For there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Think about that for a sec. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. That's not talking about eternal soul damnation there, but if you decide to fight the government, if you decide to fight the IRS, I promise you that you will be condemned by the IRS and put in jail. That kind of damnation, right? Now, verse 3. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Now, notice there, rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Rulers are not a terror to good works. Well, under Mr. Obama and other slipshod, corrupt politicians, we've been given all kinds of stuff that are wicked, right? Think about this. Hold your place in Romans 13 and turn over to Ephesians 2. Let me give you some verses that you know really well, and then you tell me if you can finish the rest of the quotation beyond what you normally quote. For by grace are you saved through faith, Ephesians 2:8. And that not of yourselves, it is a gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus unto good works, which God hath before ordained that we should walk in them. If there's something that's true, somebody that's in Jesus Christ by faith should walk in good works because God ordained it. Right? Do all Christians walk in good works because God ordained it? They do not. So, isn't it true then, back in Romans 13, that a ruler, the rule should be that a ruler would not be a terror to good works, that a ruler should appreciate law-abiding citizens? I mean, really, stop and think about it. What ruler who inherits a monarch that comes to a kingdom, or for that matter, a president that ascends to the presidency, why should they mess with guys like me? I mean, I pretty much obey the laws. There's a seatbelt problem once in a while, and I coast through a stop sign once in a while, but other than that, I don't have any misdemeanors. I don't have any felonies on my record. I pay my taxes. I don't have much money. What's wrong with me? Now, why would somebody want to mess with me and you and however other million, tens and hundreds of millions of people are like us? Well, there's a problem. And the problem is that president has all these special interests in his ear. And there's a homosexual lobby, and there's an anti-gun lobby, and there's an environmentalist lobby, and there's an animal rights lobby, and there's liberal, wacko, complete Nazi lobbies. And all those folks have money to offer, and everybody's cutting deals. See, the point I'm trying to make is there is no reason that, as a rule, rulers are a terror to good works. What makes them terrors to good works is sin. And they're affected by the sin all around them, and they themselves have ambitions and sin in their own lives, and so they become terrors to good works. But God didn't ordain the terrors. God ordained a ruler to rule, and why in the world would a ruler want to mess with law-abiding people? Unless he feels it's worth it because somebody's offering him money or power, a continued power. And my point is, it says there that those powers that be are ordained of God. God didn't ordain Barack Obama to put through Obamacare and shove homosexuality down our throats. God ordained Obama to rule the country right, but Obama messed it up by his corruption. Just like when you don't do good works as a new creature in Christ, God ordained those good works, but you may or may not keep them. Right? Does that make sense? That helps to answer whether, you know, God has laid on us all of the, is if God is responsible, I should put it that way, for all the wickedness that has been laid on us from our rulers. Because God ordained the rulers, but he also ordained that those rulers should not be a terror to good works. And I haven't bothered anybody. The closest I've come to bothering somebody is preaching on the street. And I never did throw a stone yet. My point is, have I lost you? Because the ordainment is God saying, okay, you're the ruler. Now do right. And why would he be a terror to good works unless he had ulterior motives? Which it turns out is the case. We live in a present, current evil world, and the devil is the god of this world who helps corrupt those politicians. They all promise 1,000 things. Do you think they're all entirely insincere? I mean, do you really think that every politician that ever said that he was going to go to Washington and make a genuine difference, do you really think he was lying in the back of his head when he did it? I really don't. I think that he went, and then he got swallowed by the system. Who's the head of the system? The devil. And who's responsible for being swallowed by the system? The guy. Right? Made it a little easier for me to swallow on that one. Notice another thing in this passage in Romans 12 or 13. Something that's worth considering. And again, we have currently this debate going in our country. I wish we would follow the Constitution. I wish we would. And so all the ultra conservatives, which I am one, are trying to drive the country back to the Constitution. But interestingly, would you try to find for me in Romans 13 the Constitution? Because it says there that in verse 3, for rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Notice verse 4, for he is the minister of God to thee for good. See, whether you like it or not, we're not under the Constitution. It's the ruler. Constitutional history. The Constitution was set aside back during the Civil War. Whether or not you think Abraham Lincoln was a hero, he suspended the writ of habeas corpus, had tens of thousands of people put in prison without due process of law. And when a Supreme Court justice rebuked him, he ignored the justice and kept those folks in jail. And when he put a military governor in Missouri, that governor in Missouri, whose eventual name, one of them, was named was Dodge, basically he just ruled as a military dictator in Missouri. And frankly, whether or not Lincoln in the end knew he made a mistake, nobody knows, because Lincoln wound up getting assassinated and could never face what he did wrong. But I'm telling you, you go look up on the internet Abraham Lincoln and the Constitution, and see when you read a couple of articles, if you don't come out to the realization, we're not under the Constitution anyway. They allow us to think so. But our principalities and powers, our magistrates, our men down here who are dictated to, men and women down here, are dictated to by lobbies like the anti-gun rights lobby and the homosexual lobby and the environmental lobby and the don't kill sweet little bunnies lobby. And pretty soon those guys don't know which end is up, and they're just putting money in their pockets to get elected again. By the time it's all said and done, the Constitution is not even in effect. In the end, I'll tell you what it is. Regardless of what the Constitution is or is not in American life, the fact of the matter is that as a citizen of the United States, you didn't choose to be born here, and in most regards, you didn't even choose your rulers. You are required to obey them. All you have to do is read Romans 13, 1 through 4, and you're called to obey them. Now wait. If they tell you you can't witness to a schoolmate, you can disobey that. We covered a lot of this last week, right? Where the governor, the magistrate, the president, the congressman, the chancellor tells you that you can't do something that God ordained you and called you to do. You do it anyway, right? But where it comes to paying taxes, hey, bud, you're called to pay the taxes. I'm sorry. And if he says wear a seatbelt, wear a seatbelt. Or else what? Or else you'll get a ticket. And then if you don't pay the ticket, you're going to go to court, and you can argue all day. You can argue till you're blue in the face with that judge, and you're still going to wind up paying the ticket. Right? My point, folks, is that in this passage, you're told to obey that magistrate. You're told to obey that ruler. So Obama makes a law that I resent. He told me that I had to buy life insurance or health insurance. He forces me to buy something. Imagine if somebody told you, you have to go within the next 6 months and buy a ton of peppermint sticks and eat them. You say, what guy has a right to tell me to do that? Well, what guy has the right to tell you that you have to go buy health insurance? Right? But Obama said, buy health insurance. Got the law behind him now. What does a Christian do? You buy health insurance. Right? If you think that's not right according to the law, give me a verse. You're told to obey those magistrates as long as it does not contradict the command of God. Yes, 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 yes. That includes, and look, you know what's the funny thing about all these guys that are trying to lead us off into oblivion, and I understand, I mean, driver's licenses, gun licenses, marriage licenses, tabs on your car, all those things, technically speaking, I mean, income tax, that's not a constitutional mandate. And every income tax guy, protester will tell you that income tax is supposed to be voluntary. Yeah, you go tell that to the auditor. And he'll buy it every time. Oh, yeah, for sure. See, that's the thing. In the end, it always comes down to taxes. Ultimately, what these guys want that are trying to lead you astray, they're trying to keep money in their pocket. You know what the Bible calls it? It calls it filthy lucre. Pay the stinking government its money and serve Jesus Christ while you have the freedom. It is not worth wasting the next 20 years of your life battling the IRS, trying to pay lawyers, and going through it. You're just going to waste all your time and all your resources that you could be doing something else with. We were warned in school back all the way back in 85, 86, 87 about this guy in Indianapolis named Greg Dixon. He was a pastor of a big Baptist church, and they decided that they wanted to revoke their 501c3 income. What is that? Tax-exempt status. And it was this humongous problem. And so they finally did. They were in court. And for as long as I've heard, up until just a few years back, they were in court for 25 years. They were battling this battle for 25 years. And that's all Greg Dixon could write about and talk about. That's all his church was consumed with. And it was a big church with a big, you know, physical facility. And finally, a few years back, the government declared that since they pulled out of the 501c3, that all of their taxes back through all those years were retroactive. And now they owed millions and millions of dollars for taxes. Eventually, the government came in and stormed the place and took the whole facility away. And where's the guy at? Well, he wasn't winning souls. He was fighting the government. I have never known somebody, and I've never read of anybody, that's gone up against these things, gotten involved in politics, revolution, protest of taxes or anything else, that ever came out of the whole thing spiritual and ministering and fruitful in the end. They always wind up getting buried by those problems. Why would you do that? My issue is that you're going to have these guys, some folks, whispering in your ear. There's always somebody around that thinks you should be more involved. In fact, you should run for city council, and after you're a city councilman, then you can move up to be a state representative, and then eventually you may even make Congress. And who knows, if you have a dream, you too could be president. You could be the first woman president. You're going to waste your life. And all the stuff that Jesus Christ has invested in you, you're going to waste it trying to bring about something that's a complete idealistic pipe dream. America is not going backwards to her greatness. America is going forward to her eventual drop off into the deep, into hell, because this nation is shot. It's not spiritual. It's immoral. And its politicians are not born again. There were at least some Christians in the early years of the Founding Fathers. Folks, I've spent a lot of time with Christians in the last 20 years. And a bunch of the Christians that I hang out with, present company excepted, I wouldn't trust the country in their hands either, because I think they're a bunch of commie libs. I do. I think they're a bunch of liberals. They don't know enough Bible to spit in a thimble. I'm serious. Why would I think if a bunch of Christians got elected that they would do better? They've compromised everything in the world away in their churches. Why would I think they would do better? It would have to be me made king to do better. And I don't want the job. Paul, you had your hand up. True enough. I'm not supposed to speak about what I'm speaking tonight. Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Is our mandate here political in any way? If it's not, then can you tell me a time when the government has stepped in and controlled what has been said or not said from this pulpit, either by me or anybody else? No, you can't. It would be easy enough to go underground. But my point simply is that you have to watch yourself, or you get sucked into something where you get swallowed up and you waste your time. You waste all your resources. You waste your youth. Can I show you something else? Take your Bibles. Turn to 1 Peter 2. And the end, this thing doesn't hold up. It's wise for you to serve Jesus Christ and realize that there is no utopian government. And if you think the government of 100 years ago or 200 years ago was a utopia, all you got to go read through some Civil War era stuff, abolitionism, and some of the stuff that was going on there. You're just wrong. Now, as far as today is concerned, we all know the problems. Look in 1 Peter chapter 2. If you'll go down to verse 13. Now, here's a good place to start. Submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether it be to the king as supreme, or unto governors, as unto them that are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of them that do well. Now, again, I understand that now you sometimes have well-doers that are punished, and that's too bad a thing, but that's because of the corrupt system. God didn't ordain it to be so, but he ordained the ruler. The ruler got corrupted, and now the ruler is punishing law-abiding, well-doing citizens. Verse 15, For so is the will of God, that with well-doing you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men. That's your testimony. Did you ever stop to think it's a better testimony for you to abide under a corrupt ruler and obey that ruler and pray for that ruler, 1 Timothy 2, than it is for you to rebel and act like a fool? Now look, so part of this thing, if you take this from this passage here, this is about submitting to the authority that God put over you, whether he's right or wrong. What does the Bible say to servants about their masters? To obey them, whether they're bad taskmasters or not. What about if I abide in a state or a government where an elected ruler is corrupt? You don't find a mandate in the Scripture to not obey him, unless he tells you to do something that's against the Bible. When he tells you how to raise your kids, you can disobey him there, right? When he tells you that you have to marry queers, you get to disobey him there. When he tells you not to witness at work, well, you can disobey him there. But notice verse 16, as free and not using your liberty for a cloak of maliciousness, but as the servants of God, honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. And then it goes on into servants and some other things. It's a little dangerous to do, but notice that so far, what you read here, you obey the magistrate. You obey the governor. He may be wrong. He may tell you to do something that doesn't come out in your favor. He may make you buy health insurance. He may make you pay taxes you don't want to pay. He may support the National Endowment for the Arts. You know, Paul operated under Nero. Peter operated under Nero. And when Jesus Christ had Peter go catch that fish with that gold piece in his mouth, you don't know where that money went. But don't look now, but Nero was not supporting godly governmental policy. So maybe that coin went to build infrastructure for roads and stuff, or maybe it went to National Endowment for the Arts, or maybe it went for an abortion. You don't know. But Jesus Christ still paid it. And Paul told you in Romans 13 to pay it. So it's about submission to authority. It's your business to do what you're told in that regard, as long as it doesn't go against what God told you to do. And then those rulers have to answer to God for what they did. Now, if you just stop there, and I know it's a little dangerous to do, but if you will move to 1 Peter 3:1, connect this. We've just talked about rulers and kings, right? Submitting to them. There's a few verses between there and here, but notice, likewise, first word in a sentence, likewise, just like we're supposed to submit to our corrupt rulers as long as it doesn't go against God. Likewise, ye wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, if they're good guys. Now, if they're bad guys, you don't have to obey them at all. That's not what it says, right? See, that's the thing. A guy says, well, I'm not going to submit to Obama and buy Obamacare. He has none of his business, and rah, 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 I'm going to revoke my driver's license and da, 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 da. Woman, is supper on the table yet or not? I mean, if this is about submission to authority, then it follows through right to the home, right? And a guy wants to rebel against his governor, his magistrate, but he wants his wife to obey him. Because bless God, that's the Christian thing to do. My point is, it doesn't stand up when you break it down. If he tells you to do something ungodly, if the state tries to force you to get your kids baptized, you don't have to do that. And when you don't do that, then you become subject to the system. And how many generations of Christians then suffered at the hands of the government, and sometimes a church-related government, that then put them under and sometimes killed them for standing up against the government for God. But they had grounds to do it. Now, I'll show you just another verse or two, and then I promise to leave, but Acts 25 real fast. Here's Paul's answer for that. So, you're street preaching, right? You're street preaching, and the police officer comes by and says, you need to move off this corner. He doesn't have a real good reason. What are you to do? Well, brother, first of all, move off the corner. Get his badge number, and if you think he's wrong, call the city attorney. Don't fight the police officer at the moment. Don't force him to pull out the handcuffs. Don't force him to tase you. Just leave. Call the city attorney, and if the city attorney says, oh, the cop was overzealous, then go back next week. Or leave the corner you're on and go six blocks down and do it there. Now, again, if you get forced into a position where you're doing right by God's measure and the government comes along and arrests you, okay, now you're in the system. Notice I can give you this in Acts 25. I'm not sure why I closed my Bible after I'd already turned there. Acts 25 and 11. Here's Paul now. If I be an offender or have committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. But if there be none of these things whereof these accuse me, no man may deliver me unto them. I appeal unto Caesar. Paul then spent the next 2 years of his life in the system, essentially fighting the legal battle, the courts, jail, the trip to Rome, and all those kind of things. My point is, you do what you're supposed to do. You obey the magistrates insofar as you can pay your taxes, pay your income tax, pay your tribute, and all those things. If the government commands you to do something unscriptural, then don't do it. You may want to use some wisdom. If it revolves around how you raise your kids, use some courage along with some diplomacy and see if you can avoid going to court. Because once you're in the court, you're in the system. And when you're in the system, you're subject to their timeline. And you can be tied up there for a good portion, if not all, of the rest of your life. So I'm saying, don't go there lightly. Don't just run around with a gun on your hip, you know, shooting your mouth off, talking bad about the government. And after all, they can't tell me what to do because, bless God, I'm a Bible-believing Christian and there's a constitution that we have in this country. Yeah, well, there's some things wrong with that statement. The Constitution's not in effect anymore. It's proven. It's been proven by our government. They can suspend those rights when they want to. And if you're going to be a strict constitutionist, you're going to waste a lot of time, and you're not going to get anything done for Christ. Pay your stinking, filthy lucre taxes. Buy your driver's license. When you have to do repairs on the church, go get a permit, even though it's stupid. They told me that if we changed an interior door in this church, we had to get a permit. I've never heard anything stupider in my life. I'm thinking about having to go in down there and say, hey, can I change a light bulb without giving you guys any money? Actually, I won't because I'm afraid to ask. But jump through their hoops on that stuff. Every Christian in this world that's ever lived has jumped through hoops at a certain level or another. You can't avoid it. Don't go picking a fight. Don't waste your life. Don't waste what Christ's given you to do. Don't throw it away. Questions or comments?